What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host, of course, is Thomas Trantz. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Trantz, what's up?
Hi, buddy.
Hello.
I don't know why I'm doing this bit now. Tough weekend for the Vancouver Canucks. Felt at 3-0 on Friday evening, right? Like,
yeah,
they'd maybe tapped into something.
Yep. And the Blues had the Avs the next day. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Big push.
And then the not unlikely so occurred, right? The Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, let's be real. Kevin Lankinen was not good.
Yeah.
Elvis Merzlikins was somehow worse, despite the histrionics at the end of the shootout.
Mm-hmm.
The Columbus Blue Jackets outgenerated the Canucks in that game by a massive gulf. The Canucks could not prevent scoring chances. And then St. Louis plays a heck of a game against the Colorado Avalanche. Did you watch it?
I did, actually. Yeah. Yeah, they were good.
Incredibly fun. And then the Canucks and the Jets. I mean, the Canucks played well. Like, the Jets came out the way you'd want a potential Stanley Cup contender to come out against a team that, you know, humbled them 10 days ago. Like, they haven't played a game with real stakes in months. But I thought they came out with a clear level of intent in the first 12 minutes and sort of had the Canucks hanging on, but the Canucks were defending well. They sort of were generating chances at chances without actually connecting on those scoring chances. Started to make mistakes that fed the Canucks game. But I'd say from, the midway point of the second period on, it was Winnipeg's game, and there wasn't really a ton of suspense even before Mason Appleton scored to give them the lead in the third period. Mason Appleton, always liked
your guy.
Always liked him.
Coming through, preventing you from making a trip to Winnipeg.
Wow, I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but that's hilarious. And so, yeah, I mean, tough. Like, just a really brutal set of breaks, and now I think the, you know, realistic playoff hopes anyway. It's not mathematically over, but the realistic chances of this team making the postseason are done.
And we will get into that in the whiteboard. Let's do it right now.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 31st. And the headline is, and I'm going to put this as positively as possible, the Canucks playoff hopes still technically alive after they pick up only 1 point in two games over the weekend. As you said, the wild 7-6 shootout loss to Columbus on Friday, and then the 3-1 defeat in Winnipeg yesterday. You couple that with St. Louis picking up points, and the writing is very much on the wall. So while, yes, I'm saying it, their playoff hopes are still technically alive, they're now in a position where they don't just need one miracle or one long shot, they need multiple long shot things to happen, right? Like, they need to go on an incredible heater to end the season, and they need a really significant collapse from one or both of St. Louis and Minnesota. And you got to fend off Calgary in there as well, who's ahead of you by points percentage. So it's no longer enough to say, like, hey, if they get red hot to finish the season, they're going to make the playoffs. No. You need that, and you need one of the teams in front of you to really fall flat on their face in the final 7 or 8 games, depending on which team we're talking about here, for the Canucks to have a chance. So it is very, very dire. And that performance against Winnipeg, where, as you said, they played well, but I think you were also seeing from, you know, what Quinn Hughes was able to give you. And he's obviously not at peak Quinn Hughes capabilities right now. It did kind of feel like the air going out of the balloon a little bit, right? You talked about the spent force thing a month or so ago, maybe.
Yeah, well, I talked
that
about
looked
it
like a spent force.
I talked about it in relation to the club's bet at the deadline to hold, right? Like, that was really what I was saying, was what we expect in a playoff race of this magnitude is that one team is going to go red hot. I didn't expect them to go as nuclear as St. Louis has, and I didn't think it was going to be the Blues. But typically, this is how playoff races get sorted out, is one team seizes it in a very material way. And, you know, St. Louis, so it's such an odd experience, Jamie, because it's like 14 days ago, you know, like after that, coming off that win against Winnipeg, ahead of that game against the Blues, it was like they were right there.
Yeah.
Neck and neck. The Blues win that game, but sort of gift the Canucks a point with that last second Brock Besser goal. And they haven't lost since. And the Canucks have been, I guess, if you include that St. Louis 1 point, 5 points in five games. So they've been 500 point percentage, while the Blues have been 1,000, and now it's a golf, right? You're at a point where even if the Blues win two games the rest of the way, two out of their remaining seven games, and by the way, they host the Penguins and the Detroit Red Wings, right? That would give them 91 points, and assuming at least one of those is in regulation, you know, 31 regulation wins, that would be five more than the Canucks. Canucks would still need a 5-2-1 finish to defeat them, like to get ahead of them, a 5-2-1 finish, and that's with road games against Dallas, a road game against the Colorado Avalanche. They still play the Wild. They still play Vegas twice, you know, and like Seattle and the Ducks have both beaten them since the Four Nations break.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like those are tap-ins either. It's the math is so daunting at this point that, again, I think my framing is this. They're not mathematically eliminated. Credit to the team, because I don't think we should obscure that, in fact, in elimination across the last week of games, the Canucks have played some of their most commendable hockey in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of silver linings to pick through that if this were November,
yes,
we'd have liked a lot of what we saw on this road trip. But it's not. It's not. And at this point, their realistic playoff hopes are done. They are going to require multiple miracles. A massive parlay will have to hit for the Canucks at this point.
It's like a 12-leg parlay. When you take into account all the different results they need to go their way, it's at least a 12-leg parlay.
The Canucks are your buddy at the bar who's like, well, this can save my night, and you know it's not going to.
Yeah, he's $3,000 in the hole. He's like, okay, I got this crazy parlay, though. I only put $5 down on it, but it's going to turn me around.
It's not tracking, but, you know, like, that's, in the Canucks have a chance conversation at this point, like, we have to treat them the way we'd treat that buddy.
Yes. You know,
pat them on the back.
With deep concern.
Pat them on the back, and then and then root for them still, you know, like, and if the miracle starts to pay off and it gets close, you'll celebrate with them in the bar. But, like, you know where this is going realistically. You're not, put it this way, you're expecting to pay for your own drinks.
So, and I guess I find this to be an interesting time to be doing a show, right? Because from what I've seen and listening to the post-game show yesterday, listening to Halford and Brough and Canucks Brunch with Lena and Josh on before us and seeing the texts that are coming in, I don't get the sense that there's a lot of appetite for continuing to focus on this season. Like, I think there's a lot of appetite for the post-mortem talk, the autopsy to begin on this season, which I understand.
Eh,
on the other hand,
body's not cold.
They don't wrap up play fact, for still over 2 weeks this regular season.
And like, you can't start an autopsy when you don't have a time of death. What are we talking about?
Yeah, but like, you can start, if the patient is in, if you know where it's going, you can start thinking about, like, well, how did we get here?
It's terminal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
like, what were the lifestyle choices that led to this being a terminal situation?
You want Canucks fans to start estate planning.
Basically.
Okay.
No,
well,
I'm honestly curious. Like, what people want. What is the appetite for? Because from our perspective, it's like, well, we got to do a show. Like, we got to fill time and we got 3 more months.
Oh, buddy.
This show to fill.
Buddy, are you kidding me? This is our time to shine.
That's true.
We did a whole segment on NFL cap growth and how it applies to the NHL last week.
Yeah.
And that was like in the midst of a playoff race. It's like, you're telling me we're going to have to vamp? Oh my God. What are we going to
do?
Yeah. Like, come on. We're going to be fine. You're going to, you steer the show into the most chaotic lanes imaginable,
yes,
as you do.
Yes.
And I'm more than happy to oblige.
Because there's a part of me that's like, well, let's break down what they did over the weekend. And as you're saying, like, hey, there's a lot of positive things.
I want to break down what they did over the weekend.
But I get that. But it also just feels absurd to come on and be like, in this moment where it is over and everyone's accepting that it's over, to come on and be like, hey, but. Okay, Ratu played pretty well, and he did.
And that's cool. Okay, let me talk about this for then. Okay? Let me try and end King Solomon this a little bit. No babies will be harmed, however, in the making of this segment. over the course of this road trip, in which I found myself quite impressed by the battle level, the likability, the effort, some of the signs that we saw from DPD, from Atu Ratu, the way Pew Suter became this clutch goal scorer, the Brock Besser renaissance, including moments where bringing the puck off the wall and into the slot, he was like dancing guys, like really hard to check. I thought Connor Garland looked repeatedly dangerous. I thought this Canucks blue line certainly showed me some proof of concept. Kind of reminds me of like a souped up version of what we saw when Tocchet took over for Boudreau. Remember that Akito Arose, Ethan Bear, Guillaume Brisebois, Christian Wallanen era Canucks defense corps that like punched well above their weight. Kind of reminds me of that, but like with a lot more talent. I'm into that. I think Tyler Myers playing some of the most sturdy two-way hockey of his career. Every time Tyler Myers touches the puck, I'm like, this is great stuff. Like, this is a productive play. That's a winning play. The Canucks look dangerous when he's got the puck in the offensive end. He's sturdy. So I'm watching all of this happen, and I'm also watching other games around the league. And I'm watching, for example, the Boston Bruins, who have, like, 1 point since the deadline. And part of me wonders, like, when we factor in an analysis of the Canucks standing still at the deadline and holding Besser and Suter and Forbert, you know, whatever. Suter and Besser for sure were the elective decisions where real value could have been had. Do you price in, or should we price in? Does it matter that, yeah, this team's realistic playoff hopes are likely to end or fade entirely in the next week to 10 days? But what we absolutely can say about them is that they will have gone down standing up. They will have played well and represented this team professionally and with sort of that like respect in the jersey element that Tocchet talked about after their elimination last season. You know, that sometimes doesn't happen if you sell. Now, players view that as quitting on the team.
So that's an interesting question. How much does that matter? And I think I'd invite our listeners to text in as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Normally, I think in a normal season, I would be rolling my eyes at that notion a little bit. The difference here is the difference with everything, which is Quinn Hughes.
Correct.
Because that probably does mean something to Quinn Hughes. In fact, I can pretty much say with certainty it does because of how he's played and how he's emptied the tank
and how
since
he's
the
played
deadline.
Through pain.
Yes.
I also think it matters because of the fact that the Canucks' bed has been made on this season. As much as we can talk about injuries and Demko and the many engines that sort of faded for the Canucks and the overtime record and on and on and on. Do you want to know the reason they're in this situation more than anything else? They didn't work hard consistently in way too many games in November, December, and January. Like there was a 3 month stretch where we were watching games and asking I was asking myself while watching this game, does anyone want to be here?
Patrick Alvin said it. He's driving to the rink every game and he doesn't know what he's going to get from his team. He doesn't know which version is going to show up.
They did not show up and work consistently as a group in the meat of the season. And so it matters to me that they've gotten back to like competing well and being likable and playing hockey that I actually enjoy watching, as opposed to just watching, you know, the short JT Miller shifts toward the end of his tenure and just being or some of the lackadaisical Pettersson nights, or, you know, I don't want to point fingers at individuals beyond those two. But the truth is that you were watching this just being like, what is going on? Who wants to be here right now?
Yeah.
Now, so to come out of it at least and having your captain empty the tank and having Demko back and playing pretty well, you know, I think not pretty well, really well. Right. And looking unencumbered and having some young players stepping up in pressure, real pressure games, real pressure situations. I mean, at the very least, the end of this story, even if it's not the ending that the Canucks were shooting for, and even if on the whole, this is still a massively disappointing campaign, the ending of the story at least looks more like something we can identify as Canucks hockey is consistent with the professionalism that the Tocchet Rutherford era has, you know, mostly had. And I do think that matters a little bit, and I do think that's going to matter the way out, on the way out.
The last thing I'll say on this point, to be more pessimistic than I was when I said it matters a lot to Quinn Hughes, is the whole idea of finishing strong down the stretch. The Canucks are very much in the mix to be the team that finishes with the best record without making the playoffs, which means they will have the worst possible draft pick you can have while still missing the playoffs, which seems like a very Canucks place to be.
They'll just trade the pick anyway.
Yeah, that's probably a good point, but it would be worth less than if it was a better pick.
Yeah, the first rounders, mid-first rounders, they just don't have a lot of value this year, period.
Yeah, that's fair. Maybe they'll keep it.
They should keep it. They should keep it and draft to center.
We'll see. That's something we can get into later on in the show. I do want to move on to the broadsheet here. Elliot Friedman on the latest 32 Thoughts from this morning. Pretty interesting conversation about Rick Tocchet. We won't play the clip here because it's pretty lengthy, but one thing he reports is that they've made Tocchet an offer recently, but it obviously was rejected. But the most fascinating part of it to me from what Elliot was reporting was just that this isn't a pure dollars and cents and term conversation necessarily between the Canucks and Rick Tocchet, or at least it won't be. As Elliot says, they're going to have a bigger conversation about roster and direction. He specifically says they're going to have to sit down and talk about what do we agree about on our roster? What do we disagree about on our roster? What's our process? And basically, what direction are we going? And that idea of needing to sit down and talk about just the roster and what do we agree with and what do we disagree with on the roster, I don't think I have to do a lot of reading between the lines to
get to the Hoaglander of it all.
The Hoaglander.
The Pettersson of it all.
The Pettersson of it all.
Maybe a Hoaglander. Maybe some
Hoaglander
on too.
Maybe Hoaglander's a side part of that conversation. But if you're the coach and you're like, hey, we need to sit down and talk about the roster. Well, who's making the most money on the roster? It's Elias Pettersson. Now, I might imagine Quinn Hughes and his future, that might be a part of that conversation as well. It's just, again, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but it feels like pretty open subtext there that there's going to be at least some conversation about what are we doing with Elias Pettersson, and that might influence whether or not Rick Tocchet wants to be back or at least sign a long-term extension as Canucks coach. And I think that really sets up the two most interesting decisions the team has to make going into this offseason are what do you do with Elias Pettersson? How do you sort out the Rick Tocchet situation? And how linked are those two? And is it as simple as we're probably only going forward with one of them? I don't know that, obviously, but when I hear that, hey, it's not just dollars, it's not just give me the money and the term I want, it's we got to talk about this roster. Well, it's hard to talk about this roster and what it's going to look like going forward without Elias Pettersson being a centerpiece to that conversation.
Yes, and yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely an element to which, look, how much of next season hinges on Pettersson, period? I was thinking about
an awful lot of it.
I was thinking about it today. You know, the Team America, like, we need a montage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no NHL player has ever needed
a montage. A good vibes workout montage.
100%. Like, he needs Eye of the Tiger playing.
Yeah, he needs a Rocky montage.
Yeah, like, I don't know where the
get
iconic
him out chasing some chickens around.
Totally.
And, yeah.
And I don't know what, like, the iconic natural scenery you can use to work out in Sundsvall, like, entails. Maybe it's a lake. But, yeah, I mean, he's got to have a summer that, like, straight up, you know, has the has like the tones of the Pokemon theme song going the whole time.
Did you watch the Netflix Adam Sandler basketball movie from a few years
yes.
ago? Hustle? Was that what it was called?
Yeah,
that had, I think, the longest training montage. I mean, that was like 50% montage.
What was the name of the player again?
Oh, man, I forget. But
it was iconic for a minute, though.
Yeah, it was Hernan Gomez.
It was the guy who played him,
but I forget what his name was.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, I know exactly what you're talking
about. That had a lengthy, lengthy training montage, right, where he's like running up hills and stuff.
We gotta get
PD on that plan.
I'm telling you right now, I love a training montage. The one from
I'm not complaining. I liked that movie. It
yeah,
was
yeah,
good.
Yeah. No, I love a training montage. Just like period. Like so good. So
by the way, the best part of that movie was because they just wanted to shoehorn every NBA cameo they could. Was Chris Middleton just like hanging out in the stands at the NBA Combine, as if that's what like guys making $25 million a year do
that
in their offseason? Really?
Yeah.
At the Combine?
Absolutely.
Not even Summer League. The Combine.
You get it in the NFL too. You'll get like Keenan Allen was at the NFL Combine to watch Caleb throw last year. Stuff like that. Anyway.
Well, that's a little different though. Anyways, we don't need to get bogged down in this.
No.
Point being,
everything sort of hinges on Pettersson. I think it goes well beyond Rick Tocchet. I think it goes, you know, trade considerations, the solidity of this build, like everything kind of hinges around Pettersson at this point, no?
Yeah, of course it does. Well, everything this year hinged on Pettersson too. If Pettersson was an elite player, they're probably in the playoffs, even with everything else that happened.
Yeah.
Like, even with Quinn Hughes running out of gas and Demko missing time, there's a reason you want more than one elite player on your roster. It's so they can help cover the gaps like that. Yeah. And Pettersson just was not able to do it.
We can have a bit more of a what went wrong and how do we fix it in the next segment.
Lineup notes. It's a day off for the team. Curious to see what the injury status of Pettersson and Hoglander is when the team gets back to practice tomorrow. They host Seattle on Wednesday. Should also note, Tom Volander and Boston University, they're in the Frozen Four, so congrats to them and Aiden Celebrini, Canucks draft pick as well. That starts April 10th. So the timeline for Volander potentially getting into NHL games becomes very, very compressed, and I think makes the AHL path even more likely because their regular season goes longer, and then, of course, they're going to the Calder Cup playoffs as well.
Yeah, I think it was already trending in that direction. Obviously, I reported that last week, and now I think that it just adds heft to that probability.
Yeah.
Gambling odds. Canucks now plus 750 to make the playoffs. That's about an 11%. Implied probability. And just to put into perspective how daunting the math is here, the Minnesota Wild's over-under is at 96.5. So to get to 97 points, the Canucks could drop 1 point the rest of the way, right? That's 7-0-1. To beat where the Minnesota Wild are priced at minus 105 to go over, right? Like an even money bet, basically, for the Wild to exceed 96.5. The St. Louis Blues, their over-under is set at 94.5. So to get ahead of that, the Canucks to 95 points, the Canucks could afford to drop 3 points. That would be, they have 8 games left. So that would be 6-1-1.
Yeah.
And so that's how daunting the math is based on just like the median outcome that Vegas sees for St. Louis and Minnesota at the end of the season.
And by the way, we skipped the playoff standings update, but we've kind of covered it anyways, how they are positioned relative to Minnesota and St. Louis, but for the sake of completion, we'll give you the update on Dom's model as well. Canucks playoff odds, 13%. So very long shot, but we're not talking like a 1% or 2% chance here, at least in the eyes of Dom's models. Dom's model, Calgary's at 14%, St. Louis 80%, Minnesota 92%. And by the way, before we go to break, a couple of people texting in, including Basketball Phil, Bo Cruz. The name of the player in that movie, of course.
So Pettersson needs a Bo Cruz summer.
He needs a Bo Cruz summer, no doubt about it. That's the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break. Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.